Now it came about after these things that God tested Abraham, and he said to him, Abraham, he said, here I am. And he said, go to the land of Moriah take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah on a mountain of which I will tell you to sacrifice your son. So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son. And he split the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. And on the third day, Abraham raised his eyes and saw the place from a distance. And Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go yonder, and we will worship and return to you. And Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife. And so the two of them walked on together. And Isaac spoke to Abraham his father, and he said, my father. And he said, here I am, son. And he said, behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the offering? And Abraham said, God will provide himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. So the two of them walked on together. Then they came to the place that God had told him. And Abraham arranged the wood and built the altar and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out to him, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here I am. And he said, do not stretch out your hand against the lad, nor do nothing to him. For now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld your son, your only son, from him. And Abraham raised his eyes and looked, and behold, the ram was caught in the thicket, in the thorns. And Abraham took the ram and offered him up in place of his son. If you would, open your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 11. This account is mentioned in Abraham offering his son Isaac in verse 17, and it's used as a testimony of great faith. In chapter 11, we call this chapter the Hall of Fame of Faith, if you will. And Abraham is mentioned here not just once, but a few times. Earlier in verse 8, he's mentioned as one who exhibits faith because God tells him to move, literally, pick up your stuff and go, without even telling him where he's going. And so Abraham moves spiritually to obey God. Sarah is mentioned as she is along the ride for Abraham as they're promised that they will have a son, that as Abraham is promised that he will be the father of many nations. We read about men like Abel, Enoch, Noah, Isaac, Jacob, and Moses, all who moved by faith in their relationship with God. Picking it up in verse 32, and we're going to go into chapter 12. And what more shall I say? For time will not fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, from weaknesses were made strong, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection, and others were tortured, not accepting their release in order that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others experienced mockings and scourgings, yes, also chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, they were trampled, they were put to death with the sword. They went about in sheepskin and goatskin, being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated, men of whom the world was not worthy. Wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground, all these, having gained approval through their faith, did not receive what was promised. Because God has provided something better for us, so that apart from us, they should not be made perfect. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. We see that the Hebrew writer is bringing us to a point of understanding so that when he gets to chapter 12, it's in light of everything that he just said in chapter 11. So when you see and read the account of men like Abraham and Moses and Noah and all of these that have gone before us, and we see what they did before God, moving in their relationship with God, being approved by faith in their relationship with God, he comes to say, therefore, meaning you see this. Because we have this great cloud of witnesses, because we have all of these people that went before us to do what they did in their relationship with God, how about you? We need to move in our relationship with God. We need to exhibit faith in our relationship with God. And the question comes, how do we do that? How do we do what the Hebrew writer says eventually in verse 28, that we need to show gratitude by which we may offer to God an acceptable service with reverence and awe? How do we show such gratitude? How do we show acceptable service? How do we gain approval? By faith. Well, he tells us, and that's what we're going to look at this morning. He tells us right there in the first two verses of chapter 12, the first thing we need to do is to lay aside every encumbrance or every weight or whatever load, whatever your, I think most translations say weight, but whatever it is there that's holding you down. Here's the thing about that. Who is he talking to? And let's be real. Can we be real, as the kids say? He's talking to you. He's talking to me. Because I can't control all the circumstances around me always, and I can't control people, but what I can control, and you've heard this, I'm sure you've heard this on talk shows and psychology notes of whatever type, you can always control how you react to the circumstance. And you say, but it's not easy. Well, yeah, we're not here to talk about it being easy. That's why he calls it a load. That's why he calls it a weight. That's why he calls it an encumbrance, because it's not easy. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the person that stands before God and gives an account of what you did is you. And you can blame your spouse, you can blame your kids, you can blame your parents, you can blame the people around you, you can blame the politics, you can blame the nation, you can blame. But at the end of the day, it's you. So whatever it is that's weighing you down, whatever it is that's pulling you back, whatever it is that is the obstacle that keeps you from progressing in faith in your relationship with God. And just be honest about it. Let's be real about it. Because we can find the excuses, and we do. Everybody gets busy, and I admit that. I don't pray like I should all the time. I don't study like I should all the time. I don't treat all of you the way I should all of the time. I get tired and grumpy. Yeah. That's right. Everybody feels like that some days, right? But it's not an excuse. I got to lay it aside. It's my responsibility to lay it aside. He says, the Hebrew writer, in verse 3, that we are to consider him, speaking of Jesus, who endured such hostility by sinners against himself. So that you may not be weary and tired. That you may not lose heart. Think about what Jesus went through. He got away from people because he got tired of people. Because that human side of him, he felt that, can we say annoyance? I don't know if that's reverent, but it seems that Jesus, we know he went away and prayed by himself very often. So my understanding is that he needed that. Because he was bombarded with the influence of people all the time. We know he got angry. We know he was displeased. We know he got fierce with people. He wasn't nice with the Pharisees all the time. So we see those human emotions coming out in him. And ultimately what we see is we see people not liking him. We see people getting angry at him. We see people coming at him to the point that they put him to death on a cross. And he did that so that you and I don't have an excuse. so that you and I can see and understand there isn't anything that I'm going through that stacks up against that. There isn't anything that I'm going through that is an excuse not to proceed in my relationship with God, because Jesus bridged the gap. Jesus did what you and I cannot do. And so what's the excuse? And so it's interesting, if you think physically about weights, we would use weights for weight training to make our bodies more sound, to make our bodies more fit. So let's use the weights in life, in spiritual life, to say, let me get more fit. Let me get more sound. And let me pick this up and move this aside and march closer to Jesus to gain approval and faith. Jesus said, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. He also said, you need to consider relationships with everybody else a waste, not important, not significant, because you need to follow me. And he said, the cost is great. And yet he still said, my burden is easy and my yoke is light. Because ultimately, he has done the heavy lifting. And so we are without excuse. Exercise faith and trust in him. Get rid of whatever burden it is that's holding you back. The second thing that we see and notice is that the Hebrew writer says also in verse 1 is to run with endurance the race. I don't know the last time was you ran. It's been a while for me. No, that's not true. We ran across a driveway because a guy wanted to back out. So, but that one, I was only like 8 feet, you know. So, but it, yeah, it was something. Thank you. Jen can do it a lot better and farther than I. But it's interesting that he uses such terminology. And they would have been familiar. I mean, the Romans were in power at this time. But before that, the Greeks actually started the Olympic Games hundreds of years before Jesus showed up. So they would have had a concept and understanding of games, of athletics, like you and I do. And so we see what it means. We watched the Olympics a couple of months ago, and we saw the runners. And as good and as talented as people are in their athletic ability, they still work. They still train. It's still something for them to do. And in fact, look at verse 11. The Hebrew writer says, all discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it afterwards, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. It's understandable that exercise does get to be a pain. It's, yeah, see? Discipline for a moment. And he's in a section of talking about discipline. And he uses the word, and notice, discipline and training in the same verse. But verses preceding and after, he talks about discipline. And oftentimes when we think about discipline, we think about giving it. Or if we received it, we think about it when we were kids and we got it from our parents. But we don't often think about it and getting it from God. And that's the context that he's here. God disciplines us as children. And it's not always pleasant. And discipline is not punishment. It can have it. You can punish a kid, for example, as part of the discipline. But discipline is a training. It's instruction. And if we use the athlete example, we look at those. People even with natural ability will work hard to get better. And whatever it is, if you're playing an instrument, even if you have a hobby, whatever it is, if you want to get better, you're disciplined to get better. But the thing is if we like it, it doesn't seem grueling, right? If you want to be a better gardener and you watch YouTube videos and you read books and you're doing those things don't seem complicated. They don't seem hard because you want to get better. Do you want to get better as a child of God? Do you want to get better in your relationship with him? And life is hard. Nobody's denying that. Nobody is saying to anyone anywhere that, oh, being a child of God makes it all easy. And in fact, if you're listening or reading any kind of televangelist or any kind of evangelist that tells you that being a child of God makes everything easy, makes everything simple, they're wrong. They are wrong. That's the wrong message. Because you read throughout the New Testament and you see over and over again, it was not easy. But when you read what they went through in chapter 11, I don't see any of us hiding out in caves or holes or wearing sheepskin or goatskin. I don't see any of us destitute. I don't see any of us fearing for our life. I don't see any of us, I don't know of anybody because of their Christian faith that has lost their life. Now it does happen in the world, and we know that it does, but I don't know anybody personally. And as much as our country may aggravate us, we still live in the greatest country in the world because we can gather together here and we can study these words from God without any kind of fear of persecution. So how bad is your weekend? So how bad will your Monday be? How bad will your Tuesday be? And that's the takeaway, because it's easy to be disciplined here. It's easy to say, yes, I want the training here. It's easy to say, well, I'll practice it here. But tomorrow morning when the boss gets on your nerves, or tomorrow morning when the coworker who just rubs you the wrong way, or tomorrow morning when you're in line at Walmart and that person cuts in front of you, discipline, training, and practice. That's what God does with us. And I'm sure you've heard this. We'll say that, I won't say anybody has said this, but we'll say, oh, don't pray for patience. Right? You've heard that. You haven't said that, right? We'll give you the benefit of the doubt there. Don't do that. If you need it, God already knows you need it. He's waiting on you to communicate with Him. He's waiting on you to lay aside the encumbrance. He's waiting on you to lay aside the weight. He's waiting on you to be honest with yourself, to come to Him and say, you know what, God, I need patience. And if it means that I'm going to get behind every nincompoop in every line in every store every day for the next week, then that's what it means. Quickly, I'll share an example. I shared this with the life group example. We were on vacation and we visited one of the, if not the most visited tourist attraction in the Pacific Northwest. And we walked up and there was a waterfall and there was a guy there and Cora was already there. I was going to take Cora's picture in front of the waterfall. And the guy was there and he takes a picture, snap, 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 panning, video, snap, 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 panning, video, snap, 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 panning, video. I'm not exaggerating. Cora can testify to this. Two sons standing there doing that. So he takes one son out, has the one son there, same thing, snap, 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 video, panning. It was a tall waterfall. And then he swaps them. And then he brings the two back in with the wife. Snap, 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 snap. So I finally said, after so many with the wife, I finally looked at him and said, okay, come on. And he's like, okay. Now that was the nice Brent. Because later in the day, we are hot, we are tired, we have been wall-to-wall people, and look, I love you. But you know, the world gets on my nerves. And after wall-to-wall people till the end of the day, and we're waiting on the shuttle to get back to our car, and the line, you know, people are just can't get in a line. You know, and people are wanting to get on the bus, and our family was next. Noah, Cora, Jen, me. Our family was next, and the guy said, I don't know if I'm getting more on the bus. I might be able to get two. And there was a lady that came up behind us and said, we got two, we can get on. And I turned around to her, and I said, but we were here first. And we got on the bus, by the way. The four of us got on. But I realized, you know, I don't always have Jesus in my heart. There are those times when we are tired and grumpy and hot and sweaty. And I'm just telling you, I get tired and grumpy. Everybody does. And I have things in my life that I need to lift up and get out of the way. I have things in my life that I need to look at to get better at. And it's interesting that he says to run it with endurance, because it's not a casual walk in the park. It is something you do with purpose. It is something that you would do as an athlete would train, or as a musician would train, or as someone who is a craftsman would train to be the best that they can be in that discipline. And that's sometimes what we call it. A martial art, for example, called as a discipline. Whatever that practice is, we work to be the best that we could be. Run it with purpose, because Jesus did it for you. Thirdly, we fix our eyes on Jesus. Because it is not easy picking up the weight and getting it out of the way. And it is not always easy running with endurance the race. And so the incentive is to fix our eyes on Jesus. He says in verse 2, who is the author and perfecter of faith. You know, in the secular world, I'm seeing more and more that faith is a bad word. That people that do not believe in God, and I don't know where you are in your relationship with God, maybe you struggle with the word faith. People look at the word faith and they say, well, that's a God word. That's a religious word. And I don't believe in God, so I'm not using the word faith. And they'll come up with a word, they'll say confidence. I've seen that. That's funny. But there's a belief. And what people don't see and realize is you believe in something. You believe in a lot of things and you exercise faith in everyday life. Let me ask you, have you ever gone on vacation or gone somewhere out of town and you needed something? Let's say you forgot a coat and now we have technology. You can look up stuff on your phone or whatever. What do you look for? You look for a Walmart or a Target or, you know, a thrift store. Or if you want food, and you don't want to cook it, what do you look for? You look for a restaurant. Why do you look for a restaurant? Well, that's because that's where they do food. Well, have you ever eaten at a restaurant before? Well, yeah, obviously. Well, and sometimes they give categories for restaurants. And so if you want a specific type of food, you look for a specific type of restaurant. And you say, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, why? Because I've eaten burgers before. And if I'm hungry for a hamburger, I will look for a burger joint. You know, I want some good French fries. And so you look at all of that, right? Why? See, well, this is a ridiculous line of questioning. What do you mean, why? Because there's restaurants that serve burgers and they serve fries. And if that's what I'm hungry for, that's what I'm looking for. Right. It's exactly right. Because you've done it before. And because you've done it before, that is evidence that when you look up something that says, I am a restaurant and I serve burgers and fries, you're trusting that listing because of evidence that you have experienced before. We exercise faith and belief in everyday life. You go to Walmart because you believe that Walmart has what you're looking for. Or you don't go to Walmart because you know they're not going to have what you're looking for. You go to Lowe's or Home Depot or you go to the restaurants or you do whatever. All of those are exercises of faith based on past experiences. And you can pull out other stuff because you'll say, look, I'm not eating there. The food's bad. Because it's based on a past experience. That's what faith is. That's what belief is. That is what that confidence is. And we do it in everyday life. And so when we come to our relationship with God, it's not a God word, it's not a religious word, and it's certainly not a bad word. We exercise it in our secular world, we certainly exercise it with God. And faith and trust in what we are doing here is not empty, and it is not blind. And don't you ever let someone tell you that a belief, that a faith in God, this being that we cannot see, is blind, because it is not. Because Jesus of Nazareth existed. And there is historical evidence for that. There are writings for that. And I'm not even talking about the Bible. Jesus of Nazareth, this man existed. In fact, our calendar is based on the existence of this man. This man existed. There are enough writings within the first generation of this that is overwhelming compared to others. King Arthur, for example, let me get this right, supposedly lived in 500 A.D., we don't have any writings for King Arthur until 300 to 400 years later. You believe King Arthur existed? There's more evidence for Jesus than there is King Arthur. We don't have any trouble buying that. It's not blind faith. It is based on historical evidence. Where did we come from? It's interesting to me. Astrophysicists are now saying, we don't know. Okay, it's better than making up a bunch of junk. So look, can I convince you beyond a shadow of a doubt that there is a God? No. I can't. But I can present to you evidences that makes you see and understand it is the most logical explanation. But if you're not willing to lay aside an encumbrance or some kind of weight or some kind of self-belief or whatever it is to get yourself out of way and believing that, well then, you know, there's only so much we could do. There is a philosophical Pascal's wager. It's a philosophical wager that makes the point that when you die, what happens? If it is nothing, okay. But if there is a God and you have lived your life for that God, then that side of the wager is to be better on than the other side. Because if you're betting that there is no God and you live life accordingly, and there is one, that's a bad bet. So why are we here? Where did we come from? What is all of this that people see and know and talk about with this man Jesus that existed? Well, we believe that this man existed, and we believe then we come to an evidence, an understanding that he is someone special. And so either he was just a great prophet, or either he was an insane person, or either he was exactly who he said he was as the Son of God, because he was resurrected from the dead, and we see and look at evidence around that to accept that. Say that I believe that. And so if we come to a point that we see and understand that, then we see and understand that he is the author and perfecter of faith. He gives the faith something that is tangible that you can believe in. So that you take your faith and you believe in the faith, what Jesus has given us to see and understand about who we are and where we came from and who he is as God. Jesus is the author and perfecter of faith. He gives you that. Jesus gives you the light for you, for your eyes to see. Jesus is the prize at the end of the race. Jesus is the means for you to remove the weight. Jesus gives you approval through your faith.
Brent and I are using the tag team method today. I hope you don't find it distracting, but I do have some things I want to say, and we want this day to be a day where we can all reflect on the blessings of God and the gift that we've had and the accomplishment of a goal that now the building addition, handicap restrooms, and all that's involved in that are complete, and that we see God's hand in that. And it is something to separate or to celebrate. It's you know, we recognize it's a tool. The church is just about people, but yet it's a useful tool for God's to use and help us build his kingdom. We, you know, part of the message that was behind, you know, what we chose to add on was we don't want anyone to have to feel uncomfortable being here and stay away as they have more and more physical challenges. We want it to be that everything it possibly can be to be convenient and somewhere that they come and worship and feel comfortable. And we've accomplished that. As Brent, you know, spoke about the cloud of witnesses that are listed there in Chamber 11, and I can't help, you know, as I was sitting there thinking, you know, what we planned and how to present this today of the entertainment world. The best, most talented, you know, the main attractant and performer always goes last. So I was sitting there, I thought, I should have spoken first and then we'd have had Brent. So I messed up there in the planning. But we do have a different cloud of witnesses. There's the ones we read about in Hebrew, but also there's the witnesses that have gone on before, and we narrow this in just to the Glen Rock Church of Christ congregation. And we know that in 1954, there were three families that said there can and should be a church in Southern New York County. And so they began that. And we have them to thank for where we are today. And it's the Flora and Pauline and and Ephi. And we always mention their husbands, but Pauline and Carter Osborne, and Flora and Dewey Bear, and Ephi Humphrey. And some of you might not recognize those names. You know, they were people here that started this in 54. But if I mention Alban and Bull and Bortner and Lippiet, and the names go on, then you can put a face with their children and their descendants. And those people are here because their parents taught them about the Word of God, taught them the simple redeeming gospel of Jesus Christ, and the confidence we can have in the Word of God, the Bible, to give us direction for everyday life and our worship here together. And they began in 54, and soon afterwards, there were other families that were attracted to come to a place where people loved one another and the Word of God was held up as what it truly is, the holy, inspired Word of God that gives us that direction. And some of those names, soon after 54, Cheek and Jacoby and I wrote them down. Cheek, Jacoby, and forgive me here, Doyle. And so they too came with that same commitment to teach their children. If we could change the slide there. Either the video or the one with some people, either one's fine. So now, today, we recognize that buildings are not what our main purpose is. Our main purpose is, and the church truly is, people. And as you can see, now that this building's, you know, the latest addition has been completed, we're using it. And we're using it to encourage people and have events here that for us, to build us up and invite others. And as I said, we're using a tag team concept today, and Jeffrey is so inspired about the story and loves to hear, you know, what happened in the past 70 years that he wanted to be part of this too. So we're going to hear from Jeffrey for just a second.
About 6 minutes.
I thought of true of this congregation. 70 years ago, a few families saw a need for a church in the Grand Block area. We are surrounded by their faith, their giving, and their dedication. In 1953, Dewey Bear donated the land on which the original building was built. Much of the work was done by the donors. While waiting on building inspectors, the brothers and sisters met the home of Charles and Pearl Bryant. With the building passing its inspection, the first worship took place in 1954, with about 38 people in attendance. Jim and Virginia Alden were the first to get married in the new church building. As time went by, it was decided to build a home that the preacher families would live in. That was then about 1960, only 5 or so years after the completion of the original building. The land for the parsonage was donated by Ross Cheek. The church was grown numerically and spiritually. In 1965, the church said that there was a need to develop a new auditorium and classroom space just to hold everybody that was coming to worship God. The addition was built on to the existing church building. The original building was then renovated and became what we now call the Fellowship Hall. In the 1970s, as you can see from the picture on the left, is an aerial view of the entire grounds. It was probably taken from a plane that Jim often will fly. The picture on the right is a newer picture of the church building as we have it today on the outside. Over the years, there have been many changes that have happened to this church building. Some of them were just cosmetic on the inside. In the 1970s and really up to the 2000s, the church building looked much like it did on the map. Wooden pews, a wooden communion table, a large wooden pulpit, wooden paneling up at the front, a large curtain surrounding the mural where the baptistry is. As you take a look at the picture on the right, you can see that we have modernized this building. We moved chairs. We have had a new pulpit. We also have banners in the front. And of course, we're now projecting. The thing that I want you to understand is that God provides. This church has always believed that God provides. It has provided a place to worship, and that has changed over the years. He has also provided the funds to grow this congregation, and that has continued even through our current building. Project. With both our community and our church family has aged, the need to make the building a more useful tool for growth has been seen. Become more accessible to people with mobility issues. It was decided that we needed an elevator. That decision didn't come as just an elevator, but as bathrooms that could be built on both the upper and the lower level. In an effort to continue to reach souls within our community, we wanted to make this building, which is a tool for God, as accessible to as many people as possible. That project has now been completed. With the oversight of a small group of brothers and sisters, we are blessed to have this new addition. Our repaved parking lot, a better septic tank, and a beautiful fire pit, which we gather around in the summertime. Today, people of all ages can use that elevator. We have been able to have bathrooms that are handicap accessible on both the lower level and the upper level. We have a beautiful lower lobby and a new serving area with the fellowship hall. People say the best is yet to come. We say we grow with God as disciples who make disciples who make disciples. This newest edition is one more tool God can use in growing His kingdom here in Denmark. May God be given all the glory, and may His dominion take over the life of this church family today, tomorrow, and until Jesus returns to take us home.
I want to reiterate on a couple things that, and thank you, Jeffrey. Yeah. that Jeffrey said, and that is that God provides. That's a message I one of the key points that I'm hoping that we all understand and that we see and that we know about. In this case, for this edition that we're talking a lot about today, that God provided four people that were willing to serve on the building committee. And that was Adam Markle, Valerie Perdue, Jen Keener, and especially Shane Shear. Shane led this kind of from beginning and certainly was the key person as it worked through up to the end. I also want to, the fact that we celebrate what God has done working through His people, each and every one of us, that as we put together human plans, according to our wisdom and logic, It said that the construction would be completed in November of 2023. And we just, you know, working by sight rather than faith, we just said that, well, you know, in order to do that and this cost, and costs keep going up and up, we'll probably have to take out a loan to complete this. Well, that wasn't God's plan. And because He worked through your giving hearts that we didn't need to borrow anything to complete the construction. And then paving and parking lots, they're expensive, and we thought, well, okay, that's going to come right after, and, you know, after we've exhausted probably all the funds that were available in the church's accounts, and so then we will have to borrow money. One God's plan. As we're able to do that without borrowing anything. Paid every bill on time, the whole way through. Thank you. But as we were working through all that, every time there would be a delay, whether it was the elevator wasn't ordered correctly and there was a holdup for that, or an inspection that had to be done and that person put us off and chased in circles between the township and the county, and Shane learned patience through all that. Those were a big disappointment to us. We thought, oh, we're always there, and you know, one step forward, all there'd be one step back. That was God's plan. If it would have been done on the date as originally planned, we probably would have had to ask everyone to dig very, very deep, or have a loan, and then we would have been looking at, you know, a mortgage and having to pay down this loan. What was disappointing to us, now we can look back with the clarity of hindsight and see it was all in God's plan that we arrived here debt-free. And so now our continued giving doesn't have to be looking back to that heavy cost, but it can be looking forward to how God's going to continue to bless us here. And so we want a special thanks to our building committee, and they truly deserve a round of applause. Okay, sorry, I missed a name. And I'm sure I did on some of those others. You're always reluctant about standing up here and listing names. Sure as the world you're going to forget somebody. I need your forgiveness and grace for my oversight. And I know Kevin, you know, we're going to, you know, look back through that history of time when the parsonage converted to a church office. Kevin Lockman was critical in that effort. Yeah, he didn't work all alone, but he really did a lot. And now, even as we, you know, look at what's all completed and you know, the beautiful parking lot, and Kevin Lockman made sure that all the striping was done and everything, working behind the scenes quietly. And so many of you do that in every way, working with people and just things. And it's a privilege to be your brother and to see your good works. As we kind of look back and I want to summarize a little bit that concept of that great cloud of witnesses. I think there's another slide there that'll list that chapter again. And therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses, those whose names we know and faces we can see in our memory, as well as all of these that the writer of Hebrews witnessed, let us lay aside every encumbrance and sin that so easily entangles us. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. But that, I think of those weights, those encumbrances that so easily entangle us. It's just everyday life that we just get tangled up in, and there always seems to be these important things, and then things that are more important have lasting, longer range, even eternal consequences, get put off to a more convenient time. There is no better time than the future. If something comes to your mind, someone you want to talk to, you do it now. You do it now. Fix, and that we've, you know, in the slideshow, we look back and we're thanking people in the back, and we pray that their faith of stepping out into an unknown motivates us to continue in that effort to work forward and to be disciples that make disciples, and to not be content with, okay, now this is finished, we're done. No, we're not done. We're never done till Jesus comes again. And the motivation for that is people that we can see that exhibited characteristics of Christ, and most perfectly fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame. And where is he now? He sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And as I think of, these that we've known that have already gone on to our reward, and if they could look down from heaven and say something to us, what do you think it would be? It's worth it. Don't give up. Go, go, go. Speak, talk. It's worth it. Keep on, keeping on. That's my message for you today. And as if there's anybody here today that doesn't have confidence and doesn't know that on Jesus' final judgment, you're going to be there and reign with him forever, talk to me, talk to anyone else that's there beside you, and we can have those questions answered. Don't leave here not sure, thinking that I don't know if I'm going to be in heaven forever. I hope I am. It should be beyond uncertain hope. It can be certain assurity because of what Jesus has done for you and your commitment to follow him and that faith that these clouds of witnesses from thousands of years ago and from 50 and 60 years ago can tell us that it's worth it. Don't give up. We're going to sing a song, and during that time, if you want to come forward and make any of those wishes known, please do so.